Everybody, are we ready? This is the Security Committee, February 5th, 2026, and it's 9 a.m. And let's have a call to order. Diane's here, Amelia's here, Linda Butler's here, John Merchant's here, Cecilia's here, and Brandon's here. Comments from the public? No? Okay. Let's get started. Brandon, you want to do the security report?
Yeah. Start with the operational updates. We have all full-time security department positions are currently filled. Current staffing levels include 7 full-time gate officers, 3 part-time gate officers, and 4 full-time patrol officers, 15 employees in total, including 5 probationary employees. All full-time officers hired in December have successfully completed training. Preventative maintenance was completed on vehicle number 53. The department is actively evaluating cost-effective uniform alternatives to reduce expenses while maintaining professional standards. That being with the uniforms, so like this sweater here.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to Evergood Merchants, and he was able to create a little our logo right here, our patch, and then also our side patch.
Oh.
So there's a lot of different cost-effective polos available, shirts, mm-hmm. and different kind of things that we could buy in bulk, mm-hmm. and it'll probably cut the cost in half of what we were originally spending by going through these 5-11 brands.
So that's why those patches were in there.
Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to show you guys what that looks like and what it's going to start looking like for our uniformed officers. It's going to be a lot more, like I said, a lot more cost efficient. We will be able to hopefully reallocate whatever money we save from that into, you know, purchasing different kind of better equipment for us or upgrading mm-hmm. stuff that needs to be upgraded.
Cecilia, do we have a budget for, we have a budget, a CIP budget or some budget for uniforms for security, right?
You're talking about current year or the next?
Can you talk into the
right now
microphone?
The budget we have until June. And had starting list.
I can check that for you. I don't recall the numbers right.
Oh, okay. It's usually in the budget.
Uniform? The whole concept of uniforms and stuff. I think we have a big line for repair maintenance, but
there was
nothing.
A uniform budget. I remember when we looked at it. It looked like it was quite large. Like, and that's where I got the idea.
I can check that for you.
That's not a crucial.
Yeah.
Thing, but
but you're talking about for next year, right, or this year?
Well, pretty much for next year, the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't start till June.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So the next item, the department successfully utilized the CISA. I still don't know how to say their name right. Notification system, which is the replacement for the Code Red. Mm-hmm. So when the Pescado Circle incident happened where the water main was broken, I was able to send out an alert to the residents. At first, I was able to create just a circle around Pescado, and I noticed it wasn't going to send it to anybody because nobody on that, for whatever reason, is signed up on that street.
Oh, really?
So I elected just to send it to the entire community. Hopefully that it will reach people that, you know, need to know about it mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it ended up reaching quite a few people. There's statistics that they give us about how many successful phone calls was made, emails, and it looks like it's pretty successful. I'd just like to see more people start to sign up for that. And, you know, they need to look in the pipeline and our various ways.
As usual, it takes our community a little while to respond to stuff or notice. There's some who are always aware and others who are never aware.
So, I mean, the system works. We've tested it now, and it's pretty good. So moving on to Rancho Marietta Association activity, as always, my guys are out there enforcing non-ARC rules, speed enforcement. I worked on developing a program with compliance manager Chris Smith after we dealt with the incident where a resident ended up, they found him and he was lost, didn't know where his address was.
Didn't know.
It took us about 2 hours to even find his people. They called the sheriff's department, and they posted onto their Facebook account and was able to reach the family through there, thankfully. There was a language barrier, so with us recognizing all these problems and it being the second person this month to go missing like that, we decided to work together and brainstorm on how we could develop a program that would assist us in locating people when they get lost. And we put together this form. Everything's voluntary that they would sign up for, and they would put, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. When you look through it, they'll have a photo attached if they choose so. Height, weight, color, descriptions, and only the security department and compliance will utilize this. The information will not go anywhere else, and it's only going to be used at the time when this incident, you know, happens. So this is the first step of it. It's a rough draft. If there's anything that needs to be changed, we could always change it. It's nothing said still, but once that's approved, finalized, then we can move on forward on how we're going to do a public outreach about it and actually get the program going.
Right, right.
And one of the things that we also thought about was getting the community involved in it with volunteering. Like, maybe there's people that speak different languages that could help us when these incidents happen. Like, hey, you speak, you know, Farsi or something. And, you know, and we call that guy, we could communicate with this person that way. So there's only benefits for it, and I figured that at least it'll be it'll kind of show a lot the community that, you know, what we're about and that we do care. So
I think it's a great idea, and I think that it's something that we've needed, and probably don't even a lot of people don't even realize we've needed it.
Yeah.
I was reading your incidents, and that now I understand where this is coming from. Would we have both RMA and CSD have the information available?
We would make it available in both. If we kept it in RMA's court to where it was just an RMA thing, it would only be for the community. If CSD were to elect to do it, it's district-wide. That's why we kind of want to focus more on the CSD side of it so we could do a greater public outreach.
I agree. Where would this go from committee? Can we take this to the board? Is that where it has to go, or...
I don't think so.
I don't think it even has to go to the board.
Okay.
I think that we can just say this is a great idea. The committee should probably instruct us to put it on the website, make copies for the gatehouse, include it in the new packets that we give to people
when we start doing that. Yeah.
When you're ready to go, you can put it in the pipeline too.
Yeah, put it in the pipeline. Right. Let everybody know, and put it in the new packet, the welcome packet, and then at communications, talk about putting it. At least like
the
a
good
blurb.
News and the front page, you know, as many places as we can. Okay,
maybe,
we'll talk about
maybe start looking for volunteer, like, you know, the different languages.
Yeah.
Volunteer needed.
And when we get to communications, you know, the mailer that we're talking about with the magnets, include
absolutely.
That in the absolutely. You know, welcome letter or whatever to say this is available for us.
Right. No, this... I am always delighted when you come up with an idea because it's almost always something we need to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't have even thought of it.
Yeah, that's terrific. Okay, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you again.
Right, no problem. We'll move on to the incidents and notes. I already mentioned in the security report about the cease and notification. Monday, January 5th, we had a medical emergency. One of the patrol officers was patrolling the area of... the shopping center, and he located a male that looked like he was suffering some type of an emergency. He notified the medics. They responded, and they took the guy to the pretty much took him to the hospital. He was suffering a medical emergency, so it was good of him to notice that and help the person in need at that time. On Tuesday, January 13th, we had a welfare check, and we're in contact with the homeowner's son. The son wanted us to pretty much break into the house to check on his dad. We noticed that there was Amazon packages outside and there was food left in the sink defrosting. We called the medics. The medics were able to gain entry behind through an open window, and they unfortunately found the resident deceased. And then on Monday, January 26th, this is the elderly male. He went missing. He was found, and we pretty much spent 2 hours trying to locate, and we're successful in locating the family that the elderly male belonged to. that concludes the incidents or reports, and moving on to the next. And then, as always, my my statistics and everything are attached, and if there's anything about that, I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding my report or statistics or anything.
Good job.
Thank you.
As always. Yeah. So let's move on to the discussion item, board meeting agenda. We want to go to the board with the three-part redoing of the job description. And this has been batted around, shall we say, for many months, almost since Brandon came here. You've always almost been here a year now, right?
Yep, yeah, coming up April. In April.
Yeah. And what we need to do and have worked on came up at a board meeting many months ago, and that is to discontinue the use of the CSO job description. And there are several reasons for that. We talked a little bit about it at that board meeting. My take on it was that CSOs are typically employed through a city or a sheriff's department. They are unsworn officers whose main function is to assist certified police officers. We do not have that situation in Rancho Murrieta. While the county sheriff's department is available and required to respond in certain situations, we are not a part of their organization. So any CSO positions, titled positions, are directly connected to a sheriff's department or a police department. So we wanted to change the job description, and in order to get rid of that title, we've got a new job description. I can't even begin to thank Brandon enough. When we start going through this to see what he's been working on, what he did. I asked him to do this, and he went way, way beyond that. Anytime I've ever called him, he's been right there, willing to help out. So when we get to the board, I will do the mini beginning part with why we want to get rid of the CSOs. And then Brandon is going to go into the job description and the equipment part of it, and actually educating us on observe and report.
Okay.
So the first thing I see in here was the September 18th, 2024 community services officer. That's in there. And there were a bunch of things in there that we just don't do. So that was what we were operating on, the CSO job description. And then if you go past that, we took apart here it is, sorry. So I was looking at the redline version, and it just made me dizzy, so I went right to the to the job description and went through that. There's a couple of things that I wanted to make some adjustments on. So first of all, once we get down to the patrol officer too, there's a completely different structure or setup, and I really like it. So I'm wondering if we can do patrol officer one in the same format. It looks cleaner. It looks more contemporary.
So yeah, absolutely. It will...
Don't you think it would, you know, maybe we should work on trying to get as many of these job descriptions?
I love that format. I want all the job descriptions.
Yeah,
formats.
Yeah, like the new format.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's
okay,
cleaner.
So we're going to work toward that, getting that done. It shouldn't be too hard to put this, because we've got all the information, just put it in that format.
Yes.
Okay.
I will probably wait, Cecilia, until we're taking all the job descriptions to the union, because there'll be changes in the descriptions themselves, and we'll just introduce a new format at that time.
Oh, don't wait for me.
I don't have time to go through all the job descriptions and change them right now.
It's not your job, though. It's the supervisor who's doing that job. So they can take it all the way to HR to go make it work and revise it.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
sorry. Under supervision, receives direct supervision from security sergeant. We got rid of that word. He's security supervisor, right?
Right.
Okay. Can we fix that?
Okay. Are you getting, you get,
down, one, two, the fourth bullet down, has responsibility for preserving evidence, et cetera, et cetera. Booking and transportation of persons, do we do that?
No.
Okay, so that needs to come out.
We used to do it with dogs.
Yeah.
Okay, we had a kennel.
Brendan, this is your staff, right?
One, two, three, four down, and it's the last sentence in that paragraph.
Yeah.
Booking has responsibility for preserving evidence, and then when you go down to the end, it says booking and transportation of persons. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So the rest of it is okay, right?
Correct.
But we don't carry people around in our patrol cars. Okay.
I just had one. Is there anything we do or say in here, like when they come to an incident, that it would require documentation or taking pictures or anything? For example, if they get to a situation where, and it's, I don't know
it
how
says,
to say it because it's not all situations,
uh-huh.
but I don't know, if he's out driving around and there's two cars, you know, front end meets front end.
Yeah.
And would you want to take a picture of that? Or does it matter? Or should somebody else take the picture?
Well,
know.
It says that the security guard has the responsibility for preserving evidence at the scenes of incidents and crimes, appears in court proceedings when summoned, contacts responsible public safety agencies for dealing with potential crime incidents. So
let's add a big
part of their job is doing the reporting.
Yeah, so yeah. would you include something like take pictures?
They have body cams.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if you're looking at the front door that
okay.
somebody took down with an axe,
yeah.
you know, maybe you want to take a picture of it. I don't
yeah.
know.
So when it says to preserve the evidence, so if we're the first persons or second person on the scene going to, like, say if it was like a breaking and entering and it's nobody's there and it's safe for us to be there, we would make sure that there's, you know, if there's a crowd that's there, keep them away from, you know, obstructing any of that evidence.
Right.
So it could be where we should probably take pictures just for our documentation, and it might be able to help out law enforcement when they do get there. It just depends on the certain situation,
yeah,
like you're saying.
I'm not, like I said, it
shall we just add that to the job description?
I don't know how to reference
yeah.
it because it's not just, all situations.
Just put
yeah.
it in that same...
When appropriate.
Yeah, okay.
Take
yeah.
pictures of this. And do you
take
carry...
photographic evidence.
Do you carry a cell phone?
Yes, we all have
and
a cell
you
phones.
All have your cell phones, so you could take a picture on the cell phone.
Yeah, we have district cell phones.
Perfect.
Do you guys wear body cam, too?
Yes.
So it's recorded in the...
yeah, but like John... I think of John said, it's not always... the body cam doesn't always pick up what's
all
going
the
angles, on
yeah.
in the circumstances. Okay, over to qualification requirements.
No, put it up top. Put it up top under essential duties and responsibilities. Yeah. And put it back in. They already do that, though. Every time I go and look at one of the reports in ABDI, there's photographic.
Yeah.
There's photos in there. So.
Good. Under skills in, it says use and care of firearms, and I don't think we're going in that direction. So we can take that out. Other use and care of special equipment utilized in security and crime prevention activities. Just take the firearms part out of it. And then the next paragraph, here comes my favorite part. Break this paragraph up into several bullet points.
Okay.
Okay. education and or experience. That that's all what we've been using and doing. One thing I do, I think we have to make sure we, when we get to the patrol officer too, that we indicate that that is, in some instances, a little supervisory versus patrol one does not have that responsibility. So we just have to keep reminding ourselves of that. Certificates and licenses, fine. The rest is, oh, over on the other page, last page, physical demands. Where it says occasionally, I would say sometimes. Because occasionally means, like, not very often. But sometimes is inclusive. So.
Sure.
Okay. And that's it for Patrol Officer 1.
Are you reviewing the job description right now of all the changes that will be presented in personnel committee?
Not personnel.
Oh.
I think we'll take these straight to the board.
Straight to the board, yeah.
Okay.
So we need to move on this.
Yeah, this has been going on a long time. Personnel committee, it's not like we're hiring somebody. That's what personnel does, basically.
And I have to send these over because they're both representative positions.
Right. That's the other thing that we didn't do.
Right.
That wasn't done. It became a CSO prescription description. And so we need to make sure that we include that whenever it's necessary.
So I will send these to the union. Did you want the job descriptions to go up to the board in February, too?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't want
to so I'll send
drag
it to the
this
union and ask Shannon to...
Okay.
Work through them quickly, and then if she doesn't have it done, we'll still take it to the board pending union approval.
Right.
I have just one question I'm looking to see it's not part of the job descriptions, but we just mentioned that they patrol these places and there's a picture of them. Do we really want to put the picture out?
No, probably not. But I don't know.
That's under Patrol Officer 2. We haven't gotten back there yet.
Yeah, because we definitely want our folks to know where they're going and monitor that they go there, but
right.
We don't want to tell
community
where they are.
If you take that out, we can, when we get to that part of the job description, what security patrol officers do, 66 patrol checkpoints. During an 8-hour shift, 2 to 5 minutes per location, et cetera. So we just don't have to put the pictures in.
Happy.
Yeah.
So I'll take that out of this packet too to preserve our. Yeah.
Because I've identified that section right there as where the bonfire and the beer party should occur.
Yeah.
That's true.
Where there's nobody out there. Okay. Patrol Officer 2, I find. I don't think I found basically anything just on the last page instead of occasionally sometimes. Okay, and experience is 3 years instead of one. So that's good news.
Are these your changes or?
Those are the current ones that are on there right now.
Okay, but you are the one who's making the revision, right?
I asked Brandon to bring us a report that described what the security officers do.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that he's the one who's revising these job descriptions instead of other people because it's his staff by job.
Right.
You know.
That's why he's doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have anything? No? Okay.
Except I think we finally have something that everybody can agree on. I'm very happy about that.
I am too. Well, it's been since 2018, except for that misstep with the CSO job description. And it's like some of the other things we've been talking about. It needs to happen regularly that we look at this and we question it and we make sure that that's what we're doing. And that's basically the committee's job. So, okay, Brandon, take it away.
Okay. Where are we at with this?
Purpose of the district security.
Purpose of the district security. Okay, right here. You want me to read the whole thing?
Well, you can go through and highlight the things that are important. For instance, notating incident prevention and not police officers.
Gotcha. So the purpose of the district security. Security patrol officers are employed by the district to help protect life and property within the community. Their primary mission is incident prevention, achieved through visible patrols, timely response to concerns, and continuous monitoring of the community. Security patrol officers are not police officers and do not replace law enforcement. Instead, they work alongside law enforcement agencies to enhance safety and provide additional community support. We pretty much already went over what security patrol officers do.
I think this is real important. You don't have to read it, but I think it's real important for the community to know that you're not just driving around out there, you know, having a good time drinking a Coke. That you have 66 patrol checkpoints. That's a lot. That's a lot.
And I will say, too, that these patrol checkpoints, they're created by me. So they've some of them already been there from, you know, the previous administrations and stuff like that. I have added a few of them just to help out, like a lot of the CSD owned property, like the lift stations and stuff like that, because we did have an incident where they were getting broken into, vandalized, like the Rio Oso water tank and stuff like that. So I added those to, you know, a normal stop. That way the guys could kind of check and hopefully prevent these situations from happening.
Well, if they know that they're going to get caught. When we get to the camera workshop, that's some of the stuff that I hope we can not only discuss but take some action on.
Correct. And then I put in here some common calls that we go to. We go to alarms, burglary, panic, duress, medical, fire, suspicious persons or vehicles, prowler, burglary-related activity, which is immediately reported to law enforcement, noise complaints and loud parties, parking issues and RMA rule violations, vacation and business checks, welfare checks, animal related calls, fire, smoke and campfire complaints, DUI complaints, bridge related incidents within the district responsibility. Those are just most of the common calls that we do get and that we will go to.
I think that we kind of forget that we have the Highway Patrol. Mm-hmm. And we can call them, and a lot of times when it's traffic incidences or those types of things, they can get here pretty fast.
Yeah, exactly. I will say that we did have an incident just the other day where a person fell asleep at the wheel in an intersection, and my guy did think he was, you know, inebriated. The unfortunate part is, since we do not detain, I mean, we're not cops, we can't keep them there. We did notify CHP, and they said that they're an extended out. And he unfortunately left the community, and hopefully he didn't hurt no one. But that was just one of those incidents where we couldn't, or, you know, our hands are tied with what we have. But other than that, calls related to that Highway 16 bridge, that is actually a closed county park. There's signs for it there.
Right.
You just can't see them. They're so outdated and, you know, weltered by
Maybe
weather.
We should figure out a way we can call the county and say, hey, that used to be in my, I don't know, in the 90s, I guess, when I first got here. That area didn't have no parking signs or anything.
Right.
And so every weekend we had lots of cars parked there, lots of trash left behind, people jumping off the yellow bridge, you know, I mean. So they fixed it by putting up no parking signs. And then
people are jumping off the yellow
bridge. They jump off the yellow bridge,
Oh, they've been jumping off the highway bridge.
For 100 years.
Yeah.
Or since 1925.
Right. Just when I got here in the summertime, they were jumping off the Highway 16, running through, you know, before traffic got to them and jumped into the water. So, I mean, it is an issue. And,
you need to very carefully check the depth of the river, too.
I know, right? It's not an ocean.
It varies widely.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a Darwinian concept that kind of, you know, weeds out.
Those are kids.
Not the brightest bulbs in the box.
So do we need to check for dead bodies?
One of the things to be clear on is, and I don't know where all the pieces most recently fit together because there have been so many changes. There is a dedicated parking area now that was authorized or mandated as a condition of development when they built the gardens. And there is an ancient right that goes back to 1975 that allows access to the river on mm-hmm. both sides in what's called the resource protection area. I don't know if at this point in time, when Brendan says closed park, I don't know what the rule really is anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was, Sullivan and I got into a big discussion because there was activity at the Parks Department downtown about reinstating access. I'm not saying we do anything different, but we need to at least, somebody at some point should understand the rule. I don't even know anymore what it is.
Can you look into that, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, since I was here in 2015, 2020, it was always told to me that it was a closed county park, and then there is signs that say over there, I think, want to say that, like, no trespassing and how it's closed and everything like that. You could just barely read the signs anymore.
Yeah, are they on on the which side of the road are they on?
They're 16, right here. They're like in the grassy field area.
Mm-hmm.
So okay,
as soon
okay.
As you get off the,
but the
where you
the,
can pull the, over to the
yeah,
right
yeah.
side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they put the signs up, they put the no parking signs up to control it. But I don't think that was mandate that you couldn't
mm-hmm.
go down there.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a difference. That they thought they could contain it that way, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because, like Linda said, there used to be 25, 30 cars, and they would be, they were down underneath the bridge on the east side is where the
mm-hmm.
the parties used to be.
Right.
For the most part, the way I would keep it out of our, like, you know, it's kind of out of our jurisdiction in a way. If it's a county park, that should belong to park rangers, and anything on the highway is a California Highway Patrol.
Yeah.
I mean, that way it kind of keeps us out of the
idea,
out of the liability of everything there.
I agree, and it might be something where, you know, if there's 25 people down there and we know what the rules are, maybe we make a call.
Yeah.
But I don't know anymore what the rules are.
I'll definitely look into it.
Thanks, Brendan.
No problem.
One of the things that I learned a while ago when we were, I don't know what the circumstances were that, oh, I know, it was about access to the river. That county park, the public technically could be along that river.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's in our 1984 master plan.
Okay. We wanted some things, and they wanted some things, and that was the deal that was struck.
Has that master plan been updated since 1984? Mr. Merchant?
Not that I know of. They refer back to that 1984 plan all the time.
Yeah, okay.
And reworking of that plan, that's going to depend a lot on what happens with the integrated water master plan and the community situation.
They were going to try and control it by permit access.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, John Sullivan suggested that the hotel hand out the permits.
Oh, well, that's clever.
Okay.
that was very nice of him. Very kind of him.
Okay. So,
Brandon's going to talk about the observe and report. And, John, this was one of the things that you asked about at the last time we discussed this at a board mm-hmm. meeting. Was what does it really mean? And so take it away, Brandon.
All right. So keeping in mind with the type of calls that we receive, how officers respond to these calls are observe, report, intervene when safe. Observe, officers respond safely and position themselves to monitor activity without increasing risk. They observe for suspicious behavior, hazards, signs of forced entry in individuals or vehicles leaving the area. Report. Officers provide real-time information to dispatch and notify law enforcement or emergency services when appropriate. Reports include clear details regarding people, vehicles, actions, conditions, and direction of travel. Intervene. When authorized and safe, officers may make consensual contact and request voluntary compliance, educate residents and guests on RMA or district rules, verbally de-escalate situations when safe, issue authorized RMA or district citations, provide first aid, traffic control, or fire coordination, preserve scenes by not disturbing evidence. And then what the officers do not do is chase suspects or conduct criminal investigations, perform traffic stops, and they do not act in a law enforcement type capacity.
I think that when we get to equipment, a couple of the things that are being suggested would help in that detain or arrest individuals. You'd go there first.
Right.
And then there's the citizen's arrest,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't happen very often, right, Brandon?
No, it could happen in those certain cases where there's those DUI incidents.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I'd rather have my guys approach those type of situations to kind of go around it, because you never know if somebody's suffering from a medical emergency. You could slur your speech and, you know, have diabetes and mm-hmm. has to be suffering mm-hmm. from diabetes. I would contact the fire department first and then, you know, get the, because they're professionals in that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
if they kind of deem that, like, hey, this guy is, he's intoxicated, then we can move steps to either make a citizen's arrest or hopefully they're able to get CHPs there as soon as possible.
Right. Right.
So it just, you know, how we deal with it is when it comes.
Right.
Pretty much so.
But you have, I mean, you have procedures that you've already worked through and thought through. And I think that's the thing that I'm hoping we can get across to the community, is that there you have job responsibilities, you have a plan, you know what you're supposed to do. And that information that you don't arrest people, or that there are no rules that the community has to live by.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be repeated and repeated and repeated, that is not the way this works.
Correct.
So, anyways, that's just my take on that. Go ahead.
And they do not detain or arrest individuals except in rare life-threatening situations. They do not respond to domestic violence, weapon-related calls, or suicide-related incidents. These incidents are handled directly by law enforcement and emergency responders. Citizen's arrest is rare. A citizen's arrest may occur only when there's an immediate threat to life or serious bodily injury. No reasonable alternative exists, and the action can be taken safely in accordance with district policy.
Perfect.
Yeah. I think that answers the question. I mean, we don't have a list of things that you're going to do, bing, 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 bing. You have alternatives,
mm-hmm.
which is what I was hoping for.
You know what I'd like to add in here, too, about observe and report, probably in the report section, is not only report it, but take video or,
mm-hmm.
you know, photographic evidence to include in the report.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So on we go to equipment, right? Is that right?
Everybody's favorite topic.
Well, what is this?
Okay. Brandon?
Okay. All right, so I made a little presentation on what our equipment is, what it should be, what to add. So in the summary, security patrol officers employed by the Rancho Mirada Community Service District operate under observe and report limited intervention model. To safely perform their duties and protect themselves and the public, officers are authorized to carry batons, handcuffs, and pepper spray. These tools are consistent with California private security standards and are intended solely for defensive purposes and controlled situations. So what this report is going to outline is why these tools are necessary and appropriate, associated liability considerations and risk mitigation, required training and compliance with California Bureau of Security Investigative Services, BSIS standards, and the operational and safety benefits of authorizing conducted energy devices, tasers, as a less lethal alternative to firearms. So the purpose and use of the authorized equipment. Batons are defensive tools intended for personal protection and subject control when verbal de-escalation is unsuccessful and physical resistance is encountered. The operational value provides a defensive option to create distance and disengage, allows officers to protect themselves from physical assault, supports safe control techniques when escorting or separating individuals. And then moving on to the handcuffs. Handcuffs are used only in rare and lawful circumstances, such as during a valid citizen's arrest or when necessary to prevent immediate harm. Their operational value: temporary restraint to prevent injury to the subject, officer, or others. Stabilization of situation until law enforcement arrives. Helps maintain scene safety in limited high-risk situations. Pepper spray. OC spray is the less lethal defensive option used to stop aggressive behavior without engaging in physical force. Effective against actively aggressive subjects, reduces the need for physical contact, allows officers to disengage and retreat safely. The liability considerations and risk management. The district recognizes that authorizing defensive equipment carries inherent liability. These risks are mitigated through policy, training, supervision, and strict limitations on use. Key liability controls include clearly defined use of force policy emphasizing de-escalation, mandatory training and certification for each authorized tool, regular recertification and documented proficiency, incident reporting and supervisory review of all use of force, explicit prohibition of punitive or enforcement-driven use. When properly trained and governed by policy, less lethal defensive tools reduce overall liability by lowering the likelihood of serious injury to officers, subjects, and bystanders. So the required training for those is a BSIS compliance through the Bureau of Security and Investigative Services. California law requires private security personnel to meet specific training standards through BSIS. You need to have a guard card, your baton permit, and your OC spray certification, and then you have a use of force and legal limitations training, and first aid and CPR. So all those combined will be what's the training is, and basically gives you the certifications to carry these less than lethal tools. The district ensures all security patrol officers maintain current and valid certifications and receive ongoing training aligned with state standards and district policy. So this is the next part is going to be the addition of tasers and a request for this. Use of tasers as a firearms alternative. Rationale for tasers. The district does not authorize firearms for security patrol officers. Introducing conducted injury devices, tasers provides a measured, less lethal option that bridges the gap between OC spray and physical force. Benefits of tasers include effective de-escalation of actively combative individuals, reduced need for physical struggles, lower risk of serious injury compared to batons or hands-on force, enhanced officer safety without introducing firearms into the community. Liability and public safety benefits. Tasers are widely recognized as less lethal tools. Extensive national data shows reduced injury rates when used properly. Clear deployment standards and mandatory reporting reduce misuse. Aligns with community expectations for non-militarized security. Training and oversight. Authorization of tasers would require BSIS compliant training and certification, annual recertification, medical response protocols, strict policy governing when deployment is authorized, supervisory review of every deployment. So the conclusion, the authorization of batons, handcuffs, and OC spray is necessary, appropriate, and consistent with California private security standards. These tools allow security patrol officers to safely perform limited intervention duties while prioritizing de-escalation and public safety. The addition of tasers would further enhance officer and community safety by providing less lethal alternative to firearms, reducing reliance on physical force, and aligning district operations with modern best practices in non-law enforcement security services. Staff recommends the board acknowledge and support and continued authorization of current defensive equipment and consider approval of tasers as a controlled, less lethal safety tool for security patrol officers.
I just want to make one note, and we can talk about it when we talk about the money. And that is, there's required training for all of these things, but I think that it's important for Brandon to and the security officers to have the option and the opportunity to get a de-escalation training and what's the other one? There's another de-escalation training being the approach to the situation. Have some tools in your toolbox, how to talk to somebody, how to bring them down, how to...
like conflict management?
Pardon me?
Conflict management.
Yeah, that for sure. But the de-escalation and conflict management, we talked, Brandon, and you felt like that would be, you know, getting that extra training would be important, and that you and another, I don't know, is it David Librato is next? Yeah. The two of you could go and get the training and then bring the training back to the rest of the...
Yeah, they have what's...
Instructor classes.
The trainer is what it is.
Right.
And we have de-escalation. We have many, many canned training seminars with Target Solutions that specifically work with law enforcement.
I think one of the things that...
Which, of course, we'll gladly offer to your crew, too, Chris. If write whatever trainings you want. We can just add you onto our list and send them over for you.
I think one thing that I do think is important is not just watching a film. Mm-hmm. I think practicing saying, I'm sorry, you had to wait in line, you know. Any of the kinds of things that where you're going to be in contact with the residents, de-escalating through that kind of approach. And you can watch it on film, but actually when you have to do it.
I felt like my department needs it too.
up front you do.
De-escalation is like... I
get phone call.
In itself is kind of like an art form. If you're able to talk somebody down. Yeah. And I get tired of bringing up the prison that I worked at a lot, but there was a certain incident where I worked, and the guy was dealing with some mental health issues. Mm. Everybody else really wasn't recognizing it. They thought he was just flashing out and just being crazy for no reason. But he was on the tier, and he was saying the walls were bleeding and all this. So I was like, man, that's not normal to say. And I called him up to where the tier bars are, and I started talking to him. I was like, hey, man, what's going on? He starts going off, you know, yelling, cussing me out. I was like, look, I have some friends over there in the front, and I was referring to the mental health nurses. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'd like to introduce you, man. You look like you're going through something. Look, I'm not going to put you in handcuffs. I'm going to let you off this tier, and I'll just walk you down there and introduce you to my friends. So I went out on a limb. I opened up the tier door, and I started talking to him again. I was like, hey, I wanted to introduce myself to you. I'm Brandon. I'm Brandon Reno, the major. And I put my hand out, and he shook my hand, and that's when everything kind of...
calmed down.
I got his mind off of whatever he was going on, and was able to talk him down, walk them to the mental health, and they're like, man, you know, when he got transferred to us, he didn't disclose that he was schizophrenic or any of this type of stuff. I was like, look, I seen it. Normally guys will go over there, put their hands on him, put him in handcuffs, and take him to extended lockdown. Yeah. But I mean,
which doesn't solve the problem at all.
Exactly. Right. He would have just been in another place
doing the same thing.
So I was actually able to get him help with using just, you know, my words.
And that's what I think.
It's an art, really.
You're right. It is an art form. But you can help learn how to do that through, you know, personal training from you. And watching videos is fine. I did, what did I do yesterday?
I think you did harassment training.
Yeah, and it's great.
I wish they changed the video, though. I've seen it, you know, over and over again. But that's another story.
But
6 times now, same video.
And I watched it, and I got it. You know, I've been through it before. But it's definitely the what our situation is definitely something where we can really practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't always have residents that are... what's the right word, John? That are part of the understanding of what's supposed to be in a gated community.
How to act anywhere.
We have two segments of the population. We have residents and we have entitled residents.
There you go.
That's right. I think the whole agency can benefit from these kind of training because it's part of the conflict management of when you see somebody who's excited.
There's probably some really good training out there.
Yeah. And
people that can tell you where it is. I mean, police departments do it. They may do it with a resident officer, but or they may send people out or they may bring some people in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the training's not different. So there's got to be options for us. And if I would agree it's a great thing to do, let's just find out what it costs and build it in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the next part of this. But
Call GSRMA to see if they have any free de-escalation trainings available to us. But I've taken de-escalation training with the front desk staff.
Mm-hmm.
We all went through it, and we stopped it, and we role played.
Yeah,
and
perfect.
Yeah.
But I also need that, too, because I get phone call.
Oh, yeah. Well, we need to do it again. I mean, we should do it annually up there because they're like the first line.
Right. They all funnel through back to me.
Yeah.
And Chris.
Yeah.
Let me get Cecilia for you. No, don't. Yes. Let me get Cecilia.
That's what they do.
Okay. So what we're going to do is a similar presentation to the whole board and then get a yes on the equipment, the tasers.
Yeah, I would
Is that right?
I wouldn't see any problem with any.
Yeah,
I wouldn't either.
Yeah. And it takes out the risk of firearms because, I mean, firearms kind of, you know, it's a final decision when you pull the trigger, unfortunately.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
You know, you don't know where that bullet's going to go if you miss. So,
the security is the only people in the entire place without a firearm.
Not in my house. No firearms in my house.
I want to add something is if this gets approved, then start gathering the numbers because our final
budget will be shown
the first time.
We're
going to
take it to the board this 2 weeks, 1 week.
But start gathering the number because even, you know, the cost of everything.
Yeah.
And that's why we're going to move on to the CIP review.
The only question about with that is do we allow our officers to purchase their own or do we provide it as a district equipment, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a cost?
Mm-hmm. And keep it
as a district-owned property. And
that's what I would
prefer. I think that's...
I think the district should be purchasing.
Yeah, that's where you want to be because that gives you control over it.
Right.
Either issue it or take it away.
Exactly.
Or you're the one who decide which brand they should be using.
Correct.
You know, consistent with your protocol, you know.
That sounds good.
So we'll put this on the agenda for February board meeting. All right. The next step in this process is trying to figure out how we can get the stuff that the security department needs. And we've talked about all of these. The one thing that, thank you, Cecilia, she reminded me of is that we had talked about radios, and that is not in this, so we need to include that in our conversation today if we can get through this. I don't mind if we run into communications. Communications is not going to take a long time today. or ever.
I have one question as we move into this. Do we still have a security fee
security
for undeveloped property?
Yes, sir. Can I share that with you?
Well, and what I'm interested in is what is it now, and when was the last time we changed it?
I believe it's changed annually with the ordinance that increases the rates.
Okay, and is it a tax?
No, it's not a tax. It's a fee.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So does that come under the heading of security impact fees?
No.
It's like, for example...
I think it's called security tax.
Undeveloped property.
Yeah, and we have undeveloped property, and we also have property in construction. There's a whole section that now has roads that has never had roads before.
I have to go back and say that I misspoke. It is a tax because that's all we can charge for security is a tax.
Oh, okay.
It's a tax. It's charged by the acre. Inside the gates, it's $28.32 per acre, and outside the gates, it's $4.22 per acre per month.
For undeveloped property?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay.
And yes, that is adjusted annually to 2%.
Yeah, okay.
We can only do it to a 2% increase?
Yeah.
Yes, because it's tax, and that's what the tax says.
So somewhere in all of this, I think it'd be a good idea for us to put that down. Maybe when we start talking about security impact fees, we can put that in as another fee that we collect for security. Is that not what we're getting?
Security impact fees are the fees that are charged to developers.
I know. I get that.
Which is a fee and not a tax. So in addition to that fee, all the people who move into those homes are responsible to start paying the security taxes.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, the reason it's in my head is, for example, now, if you look at residences east and west.
Sure.
Okay, which will be for years under construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are now roads where there were never roads. We're going to be expected to go up and down those roads. Do we provide security for areas in construction? Are they responsible for providing their own security? I don't have the answers. I'm just asking the questions.
Brandon?
For who?
For example, the
new residences on Guadalupe.
Undeveloped property.
That should be us, no matter what.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they're paying the tax for the undeveloped
because,
property.
Like, even for instance, the whatchamacallit, the retreats.
Yeah.
And all them, we still provide security for them, all those other build-outs.
Yeah. And see, where you are with the retreats is you have folks living in those houses and they're paying a security tax.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
Where you have 198 houses all the way from four models to nothing.
And they're being built.
Same thing with Riverview.
195, yeah, 195 to go. You know, that was one trail through the center of it since 1984.
Right.
And now we have all these roads, we got all these houses, we got all this construction material, blah, 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 that's up there.
Which is probably, construction material is pretty appealing.
And at a cost per acre, he's going to get that for like $25 a month.
So I'm looking at the rate change table published last budget year. There's a section for security, and yes, there's a 2%, but it's all broken out by category. One of the categories is called undeveloped property, so maybe that should be charged to them.
And
I'm gonna go find out if we did charge them.
Yeah, and we will, and we have. We probably have, but we charged it as undeveloped property.
Yeah. Okay. So now that needs to change to.
No,
residential lots, because they are now residential lots, aren't they?
They are. Yes, they are.
They're just not built.
And they are. Not only are they residential lots, they have been. They have been
because
approved.
The infrastructure is in the ground.
Yeah, they have a 2007 approval on their plan that created the lots, and they are lots. They're not. There's not a meter on most of them, but there are lots.
Can you give me a few names so I can go back and check if we do?
And if I may go a bit deeper on that idea, residential per lot, inside the gates, I have metered and I have unmetered.
Okay.
So they should be charged residential per lot, unmetered, at $26.29 per lot per month.
$26.29.
Yes, sir.
$196.
Yes.
Now, there's a section underneath called undeveloped property. Is that for construction?
No.
No, that's undeveloped property. That's all the property behind the lakes. That's all the green you see on the.
It's all, the right,
all those acres and acres.
It's all the stuff that developed.
Right,
no.
To the right of the lakes.
And up above.
Yeah.
So who do I bill it to?
Right now to.
Carol Anderson Moore. Roger North Properties.
RMN.
RMN.
But surely that's already being billed. I mean, after all these years, John.
I would be very careful making a statement like that these days.
Right.
Very careful. But yes, it should be. It should be.
What?
And it was.
Okay.
And we've had many a war over the cost.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
That's why
CSD owns security.
I think that.
And those lots are being taxed because I remember when I started, Mark Martin had a presentation for the board, and you'll probably remember it, saying that those lots were delinquent on their property taxes.
Yes, but
and so
that's the county property tax. That's not the CSD.
No, no. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase. Those lots were delinquent on their CSD security tax, and that's why there were such enormous amounts of money, because they were such large lots, such big acres.
So let me just make sure I understand this. Security impact fees, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Right.
We're talking about undeveloped lots and the fees that they have to pay until they start to develop. And
right.
then the fees change.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
right.
have undeveloped land, and I had forgotten about unmetered.
Right.
And then we have metered.
Yes.
So can we... I don't know what you want to call it, but can we make sure that there's some place where we can look this up? I'm sure there already is. But,
yes, Cecilia's going to double check for us.
Yeah, we'll see what we can review what it is and what we build.
What we
whether we're building everybody
getting,
and
yeah.
we're building it correctly.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, doing an audit on the security tax, whether we have built everybody.
On the undeveloped and property that's under construction, not on the.
Yeah, the regular folks, the regular metered folks, or we know
it.
What we do there.
Yeah,
yeah. But then I have the unmetered residential per lot, which is all Bob's, where now that he's broken them into lots.
Right.
And then the stuff that's out around the reservoirs is zoned differently. It's a agricultural zoning rather than a residential zoning.
Mm-hmm.
So that also has to be addressed. I don't know if it's
that's the undeveloped property
right,
per
right,
acre.
Right, right.
Right. And so now we're billing $28 an acre.
If it's A2, A5, or A10 designation, then that's undeveloped.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So for my peace of mind, we're gonna figure out who's getting what and who hasn't paid what and
right.
Right.
Okay.
See
what can help we bill everybody.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Perfect.
Would
All
you
right.
like me to just send the report out to you guys or bring it into the next session?
I think it'd be great if you brought it to the next meeting. You can send it to us, and then we can talk about it. We'll put it on the agenda.
Right. If there's anything we're omitting that we need to start charging for immediately, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you calculate the revenue that's available going forward for security for the next year, it can be included in that revenue. For example, if we're collecting security for an undeveloped area owned by RMN, which is
a lot,
600-700 acres.
Right.
In my mind, that's security money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it is or not. I don't know what we do with it when we get it.
I think I'm going to generate a list, and
yeah.
then all of us have a working group to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
First, because that would affect my budget too. I have to resolve
right,
it
right,
by the
exactly.
end of this month.
Right.
And
well,
I'm not familiar with everybody here, like all the properties you guys do. Then mm-hmm. you guys can glance at it and tell me if we
right,
have
right.
completed.
Yeah. You
all
tell
the
us what yeah. what you have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll tell you what you're missing.
Yeah. Undeveloped property pays drainage tax as well.
Yes.
2% increase.
Uh huh.
And
just
like,
those two paid
example,
and undeveloped
properties. For
residences,
property. We got a lot of drainage. We know we got a lot. We have a very own lake up
there. I know they've got their own little lake.
That's always nice. Okay, let's see if we can do this kind of quickly. The CIP review, I just want to assure Cecilia that this is a kind of plan. We don't know if we have the money, but we're trying to look at these needs in a way that we can break it out and spread it over a period of time without, without feeling or being in a position where we're constantly repairing things that we should just replace. So there were the gate operations, there's the gates themselves, not just the arm, but the whole mechanism. And then there's radios now and training. So what we looked at was there's a total of 9 gates, and one gate in the south has been replaced, completely replaced. So that leaves us with 8 gates, and I'd like to see it within the next 3 years if we can do it. Brandon's got 2 other companies besides the one that we've got some numbers on. I don't know if, I guess what we would want to do is make sure that we are getting the best deal.
Yeah, so the on number 2 right there, the third bullet down, the initial cost is $6,000. That was actually for ABDI to give us those AI cameras for the LPRs to activate that. That wasn't for the new company of GoAxis that we've been looking into.
Oh, okay.
So that line specifically is for ABDI. It would bring our cost of ABDI up to about $2,000 per month.
Yeah.
And the initial cost of $6,000. So
can we talk about that next? I just want to see if there's some way that we can get 8 gates replaced in the next couple years. And one of the things that I'm still trying to figure out is where this, and Cecilia too, where is the security impact money going, and how much do we have, and how much of that is actually available for us to use to do some of this. So the cost per gate from the company that we're using right now, right?
That quote right there, the $62,000, was from the guy that put in the gate over there at the at the south.
What was the name of that company? Do you remember?
Yes, it's at the top of my head. It was Central Valley. Central Valley.
And do you think you haven't talked to anybody else, or have you?
I've been working with the one that we've used for years. Right now, I'm waiting for a quote. He knows about that gate that we have over there at the south.
Mm-hmm.
He advised me that's pretty much like the Great Value brand of gates. And then the other ones are pretty much a more higher standard that we have in right now that open up quicker and they're more durable.
We don't want opening up quicker.
Right. So he's going to give me a cost of 2 different gates. So that way we could see exactly what's cheaper, what's more durable, and that way we could have something to go go off of.
With the traditional gate, iron gate, can we look at technology? What kind of technology do we have to replace the traditional gate?
Well, that's what we're doing.
Are we replacing the gate? Right now we're talking about gate.
The whole thing. Yeah. Not just the bar, the whole thing.
Yeah, we can
the mechanism
we can
that makes
some,
it work.
We can spend some time on that. But we're buying equipment, and nobody even knows the number. But we know how many personal contacts we have at gate operations, and it's we're doing
thousands.
A couple of hundred thousand, mm-hmm. quarter of a million a year. We're doing multi-million lifts.
Yeah.
A multi-million on all that we add them all up. So yeah, if you buy Brand X, how many multi-million are you going to get out of Brand X, and maybe you ought to be buying Brand Y.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that makes sense.
Totally understandable. I think that sometimes it's confusing because we do replace the arms, but we're talking about replacing the arms.
No.
They're the whole mechanism that makes it work. When you push a button, the gate goes up. That's what costs this much money, and they have not been replaced in 20, 30 years. And so,
yeah, they said Remsen was the one that ordered those gates.
Okay. So replacing those gates should be on a CIP plan, and we need to figure out where we're going to get the money to do it.
Well, I was just thinking about with the advance of technology. So instead of a traditional gate that opens up like that,
that's what we're going to do.
I'm just thinking that if there are any more advanced technology that we can use to do the same purpose of the gates. For example, I'm making things up because I don't know anything about gates. If each car is registered and has some sort of
transponder.
Visual scan that we can scan the car and pick up the license and know that that's our car and it's allowed, then the floor has like a little spike that always come on board.
We're talking about
let me finish.
I'm not talking
about
the
my
residents,
idea.
Not the visitor.
Right, but I'm saying that I'm giving you an example that it's not to be used. Because I'm not specialized in security gate, but I'm saying that what other solution or that we can use as far as technology? That what's the trend of security gate? What other people are using? Is there a cheaper way to do it instead of a security gate? Just look into other stuff too.
Can you give me this a best guess here? You're talking to these multi-companies about technology, and if you buy on the high end, are we and we're talking about incorporating all of our gates. Mm-hmm. How many total we got now?
Seven? Nine.
Huh?
Nine.
So
one's already done.
Yeah.
So we're talking about eight gates.
So if we look at that, are we ballparking $100,000, $200,000? What are we?
No, we're ballparking 60. I would say 65 probably.
That $62,000 quote, it was set to expire. It has since expired because you said with tariffs and different things,
right.
Yeah. the price will change if we don't jump on it right then and there.
Mm-hmm. Brandon.
Yeah, so that quote has since expired.
And that's
we
for
do
the
have
least
to,
expensive.
Yeah, and that was for that that Walmart brand gate that we have the
right.
You know pretty much.
So let me because I want to. I'm just trying to get a broad understanding here of you know when you're talking about 62,000 and you're talking about 3 years, no, 62,000 is 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Well, in a different department maybe where they had money, but we
spend nearly that much money on lights.
But because the security department has such a small budget,
I get that. But what I'm looking at here is realistically. We started this discussion, which is going to get to here, on barcodes.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, what does it cost us, hypothetically, okay, if we say we were going to charge people $10?
Mm-hmm. That was going to be $80,000.
Okay. So,
oh, no, probably more like $40,000.
So if we're looking at this type of infrastructure change, legitimately, make it 15.
Can I just say something? This is something that we have put out for discussion, which we're having now. But it's to try and give us an idea of how we can get this done because we don't have any money. So that's why I split it up, and that's why Brandon's going to get a couple more quotes. Obviously, we think that the cost per gate and the eight gates total is going to be more because we're not going to buy the cheap stuff. And hopefully it's going to last.
Yeah.
But we need a plan, and I wanted to present this because we have three things that we need to do. And part of what getting this done involves is getting to the point where we understand what we have as far as security impact fees are concerned.
Yeah.
Those fees are specifically to be applied to equipment, not people. The barcodes were for patrol officers. Not equipment. So there's a separation there. Barcodes, that's on the list of question marks. Where are we with it, et cetera, et cetera. But security impact fees are for, I have somewhere the whole list of things that Mike Martell gave us. So can we go forward with this, get a real real-time quote, I guess we would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Cecilia, can you, when you're done with audits and whatever, can you give us the information on security impact fees? You and I have talked about that. How, what we have. And because we won't know until the audits are done if these impact fees were collected. I looked up when they started, and it was in 2015, it had been approved apparently ahead of time, but it was for the retreats, the original retreats, the 22 of them. So, working back from that, how many times have we collected security impact fees? I don't know how to do that. That's a historical budget kind of thing.
Where I think the last time I show in my presentation on
$106,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have that as of a certain point, and then going forward, the 24. I have to complete 4 more years of audit to get the real number.
So is it possible that we have more than $106,000? Because is it when we start looking into what's been built and how much has been collected, was it put in the right place? Was it spent for something else? So
that's what I'm doing now, so I can't say for sure how much we have right now.
Yeah, I know. that's why I'm saying we want to put together a plan, and we got to get more information. And so before we do anything about this, we need to get our quotes, and then we need to get information about how we're going to pay for it. My suggestion is to spread it out over a certain period of time so that we can actually fund this.
But John, is it John's idea that we cannot wait, or we have to do it right away?
It's all dependent on the money.
Well, if it's just mechanically the thing that sits on the ground and the gate that goes up, that's mechanical. Okay, you can do those as you see fit. If this system and how it records the data from those lifts is integrated into a department-wide or a district-wide plan, then integrating it as a whole is much more important than just fixing individual gates. If you're only worried about how they go up and down, that's one thing. If you're worried about how the whole integrated package between the 9 of them for these million lifts that we have
a year,
then it's a whole different analysis.
I thought that the impact fee, though, could only be used for new development.
What?
I thought that the security impact fee could only be used for development.
That's right. That's for this kind of stuff.
No, this has nothing to do with development. Getting new gates isn't going to specifically enhance or add the infrastructure necessary for the new development.
And that's not what it's for. That's not the only thing it's for. It's for equipment. I don't have it with me.
I think I read the security impact fee. It is for this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Trouble is the way that the development is scheduled at this time. You'll get 7 next year and 15 the year after and
right.
25 the year after that, and then maybe at the fourth year you'll have all 198 houses.
But we need new gates right now.
And the last 100 at Riverview is the same thing. The accumulation is a dribble. And I don't know when you execute it. Do you pay it on the meter by meter?
When you get a meter.
That's when it comes due.
Right.
And it's not up front for the 198.
No.
Then
you're
going to be 7 years collecting that money. It's
right.
So I.
But
I
the
think
bottom line is trying to figure out what we have. So maybe we don't have to do 2 a year or 3 a year. Maybe we don't have to spread it out.
I think so. And I mean, if you give me the numbers, I'll put together the budget and the ongoing security impact fee, how we should spend it. So just get me the number and I'll put it through.
It's right here.
Well, you just said that this is an old quote, right?
No, I mean the number of gates and the plan are right here. The money is
right. So it's fine. You gave me this already, and I'm already in the process of putting the budget together, and I will factor that in to see whether we should fund it through security impact fee or how we should fund it. But I think one thing that for sure since last year, we have that barcode money that we're working on that potentially can generate $80,000, let's say. We should work
for
on
people,
that.
Not for equipment.
It's still funding that can help if we can use that money for anything to pay for the salary. There's more to do ABDI and other software that we can buy. So if we can work on both, and I will look at the security tax to see if we bill everything to our residents, and at the same time work on the barcode fee to see if we can get another stream of money to pay
to hire another person.
You know, to fund the budgets, you know, the security budgets.
It was not My understanding is it wasn't funded for this last half.
Yeah, the last
because
budget...
Because there were no barcode fees.
Yes, we budget for $40,000 for the barcode fee, but it was never collected.
Right.
So my advice is to start working on it now to see if we can put it into the next budget. So we have additional funding.
I want to be clear about the fact that those barcode fees were specifically for a person. They're for people. They're not for equipment.
Is that true, Amelia? The barcode fee was funded
for getting new people.
It was supposed to make up a budget shortfall.
It was supposed to make up
not
a budget
shortfall.
Well, that's true.
Shortfall.
Was supposed to pay for what
those two extra security patrol officers because
people and equipment.
Yeah, I don't think there's a restriction that I've seen anywhere that's the barcode is restricted for only funding of the personnel. Security impact fee is restricted for that purpose.
It's not for personnel. Security impact fees are for equipment.
Security impact fee, there's a listing of what we're funding for, but there isn't a restriction of policy that barcode money is restricted for personnel.
I don't know what it says in the ordinance. We already have an ordinance.
For the barcode?
The ordinance was never passed. We have a draft ordinance.
For the barcode?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So then, you know,
so
if we get
extra
money...
So what does the draft ordinance say?
Let me take a look at that. Hang on.
So I kind of wanted to just make a comment about what I feel is what I would like us to start focus on from in the future and going forward. The things that's most important to me right now for the security department, and I think I kind of got them from one to three right now on my top of my list, which is going to be our software, the gates, and the radios.
Thank you.
In that order, because the software is what's going to speed up the process of entering these north and south gates, and with this development coming, it's only going to get worse.
I know.
We have to speed up the
gates,
process.
Not gate arms, but the whole mechanism.
The software itself.
That's one, and then two is the software, which is what I had on here.
Yep.
And then I had under, I threw in the radios, but we don't have that on the list. And then I said, investigate the status of security impact fees when schedule permits. Determine the amount of existing security impact fees, possibly $106,000. Project security impact fees available in 2026, 27, and 28. And start the search with that May 15th board meeting, which is the first time they were putting out or collecting security impact fees. What was on the original retreats for 22 houses.
So if there's no restriction on the barcode, that would supplement the whole budget, regardless of whether it's software, gate, or anything. Like if we don't have enough money in the security impact fee bucket, then if there's barcode, I can use it for that too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, again, since the ordinance hasn't been passed, there's no restriction. There's no restriction. There's no restriction on the money that we haven't collected because staff doesn't have the bandwidth to figure out how many people should get it, how it's going to be implemented into the utility billing system, the educational campaign that's necessary for the residents. So, if you want it to go for equipment, then when and if we present the ordinance again, let's add that in there.
I don't have a preference. I'm just trying to figure out what we are supposed to do with the money that we have. And I was under the impression that it was supposed to go for personnel. And that may not be true.
No, it was really, and we did it here. Tim was sitting right here.
We said we had
an $83,000 contribution to the security budget that came from property tax revenue. Because we had not, and we were not ready to or equipped to take Mark's proposal for gate money and use that to close the gap so that securities revenue came from security sources, both security revenue from here and security tax from here combined balance the budget. There was never any discussion about what the we were just trying to close the gap on existing.
Right, that's not advancing.
And the only, you know, and my thought process here was no more than to say, well, if we need $106,000 to totally renovate a completely broken down gate system, then, you know, how do we get that sooner rather than later?
I agree.
That's what I'm trying to do here. And I didn't know, and I still don't know, and we can work this out when we have some time, is okay if we now have a handle on how many barcodes we have and how we project that out to vehicles and how many, how much, what it costs. My question, it's only a question, is okay if we were going to charge 10
or 20
and now we're going to charge 15, do we get another $106,000?
Right.
If we can, and if we pitch that to the people that, the only people that are going to pay this are people who use the gates. We have these other fights with security impact fees about, well, we got to put a camera on the hotel and we got to put a camera down in front of the village.
Yeah.
We've had all of these fights. And I'm glad that Mike is on this because Mike is the
authority
of it.
I
don't know that
a work group.
I don't know that you get all those security impact fees assigned to gates. I don't think that's going to work. You can if you can, then. But again, I'm telling you, you're going to get that money in dribs and drabs.
Well, and I think that before we really count these chickens, we need to realize that by imposing a fee of any sort, I believe the residents are going to say, fine, I'll just go through the visitor's gate. I'll take that extra time and not pay the fee. I'm hoping that doesn't happen, John, but
let's be realistic.
At least at first.
There'll be a few.
The backup at the gates.
You can't create a tax for entrance to the gates?
It's not. We can't create any kind of tax unless it is supported by a two-thirds vote of the voters. We can't increase the tax any more than it already is. We tried with Measure R to impose a new tax for security that would have funded us. We would have been awesome. But the
$20 more a month, and they voted it down.
And they voted it down.
So
and there's a variety of reasons they say they voted it down, but let's not.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask this: how set in stone are we with RMA's with our contract with the RMA on what security does for them?
We're not. That was not, my next part of that is.
Can we raise their fee on what they charge us?
We can.
Well, let me just peek into that contract really quickly.
Because if we raise their fee to maintain to help us maintain the gates and. You know, it would probably help us out a lot.
And you know, they can conveniently pass along those increases in fees to, by the mutual benefit agreement, allows them to spread those fees into the other homeowners associations that are inside the gates. So if they raise my dues, Linda's dues, that goes to Kyle's dues and
Riverview and retreats and
it's all one. Yeah,
the villas.
Riverview you get anyway because we should be getting it.
Oh, is Riverview part of RMA?
That's a 1990 deal.
Okay, Riverview's part of RMA. Okay, I can't keep it straight.
Well, it's confusing, believe me.
Yeah.
Part of that, just the last part of that is. I'm looking for my calculator.
What are you looking for?
Okay. Well, I'm discussing these sophisticated systems that we want to implement. I can't even find my calculator on my phone. So here we go. I got it. If you, for example, if you take the 198 units in in the residences east and west, and you times those times 2.5 cars, that's generous. Okay. That's a 500 car increase by itself, and then when you add in the 15% of service vehicles that
we're going to go in and visit with them,
go in conjunction with that part of the development, and all the guests that come with those on the 4th of July for the people there, there is an impact. I mean, there is an impact. And you wonder at this point, without the in, and all of this traffic is directed towards the north, and believe me, it's all coming down one road.
Yeah. I know.
Coming down Para. So if we don't get this technology implemented in front of that increase,
it's going to be a mess.
Just gets worse.
Yeah.
Just gets worse.
And so that we are all on the same page, we have an agreement with RMA to provide them patrol services, not gate. I mean, yes. This agreement is specifically for us to provide patrol services, not gate services.
With charges or without charges?
We pay them $35 an hour for a total of 5 hours a month.
We pay them.
I'm sorry, they pay us.
Oh, okay.
So, and what are we inspecting for?
The term of this agreement is 12 months from the date of the agreement. Either party may terminate this agreement with 60 days written notice.
Can you send me that?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Are we billing them? I don't know.
So it sounds like
well,
we should...
Well, it's sort of what happens.
Yeah, no,
and
I'm...
And what has happened yes. over the years is that we do a lot of...
free services.
Patrol, you know, the yeah, CSD if, is if, beholding if, or if responsible to the RMA.
If he reports a speeding violation, RMA gets $100.
Mm-hmm. You want to go at 10:30, sir.
I know.
And... I mean, when you look at it, too, if they were to go with a private security company, you know how much they would be paying?
Yeah.
A private security company, that's $1 million or more contract.
Yeah. So.
So for five hours an hour.
I'm not suggesting there would be a fight in having that discussion to realistically reappraise the fees. I don't know if there is or there isn't, but you don't know until you try.
Well, at a minimum, we should increase that fee structure.
Because that was 2000, it was.
Oh, okay. I'll look into that and see if we are billing them.
It was 2000 that was determined.
So I am going to put all these request lists on the newest budgets as a placeholder and then work out all the revenue and see how we can balance it as a draft. But I would recommend that, you know, we all know that will be a deficit. Right, so in anticipation with that, we should start working on the barcode revenue and see if we can get some.
I have nothing to do with that.
So who can hold that project right now?
We don't, well, you, and I don't realistically know if you could employ a temp at a level or not a level, you could employ one at a level, but I mean, you might want to think about, is it realistic for somebody from Robert Half to do that analysis that we don't have anybody here to do?
Right.
What exactly do we have to do? Like, I know we talked about going back to ABDI and find out
they can run a report and let me know who has not gone through the gates with their barcode sticker in the last 12 months.
Right.
Okay. So our theory was to cut them off, you know, send it, advertise it, let everybody know, cut them off, and then everybody else send the $25. Originally, the ordinance, which hasn't been passed, so would have to go to the board, is for $25 one-time fee at startup, which would be immediately, and then a $10 a month annual fee. But
$10 a year annual fee.
Mm-hmm.
Per car.
But Mark had that originally at 8,000 cars, and we're thinking it was more like 6,000, I think, is what...
No, he has it down in the budget as 10,000. It's more.
10,000 cars?
I'm going to go back and look at it, because he has...
Anyway, whatever it was overstated, because it didn't take into consideration all those cars that have been sold, you know, I have moved...
So am I right to say that we need to download the ABDI data and evaluate which car is still valid and still with us, and then calculate the amount of revenue
right.
for the valid car?
Well, the ABDI data was going back a year, but I could ask them to pull a report for the last 6 months of vehicles that have not been
gate. You need someone
to do
however you get them. to do the analysis that comes with that once you know what the numbers are, because what we talked about originally was you don't cut anybody off, because he's going to have 90 cars stacked up on the Jackson Highway.
Right. And we're going to have 900 phone calls up front.
You're going to have 15 cars standing behind each gate because the gate won't open.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And then what do? You can't. That's the reason we didn't implement it, was the chaos we anticipated that would go along with it. So what we have to have a complete plan, and along with the complete plan, we need to do the kind of analysis: what does our revenue look like for the next year? How much more revenue do we need, and how much of it can we squeeze out of a barcode program?
And then
exactly.
There
are not a lot of other options. Plus, what realistically could we explain to RMA that tells them that service improves by a raising of their fees and then try and negotiate?
I would suggest with the barcode situation, maybe making it to where it would be a 5-year plan. That way you don't have that, and just raise the fee of the barcode instead of doing an annual thing and, you know, kind of work it out to where it would be.
That's probably a good thing to consider.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, rather than doing that work on every car every year.
Yeah, I looked at the utility billing system at that time, you know, 6-7 months ago, and we kind of thought that instead of people paying a separate check to us, it would be part of the utility billing that we bill them monthly, $5 or something, you know, and they can just pay while they're paying the fee. So we won't have people coming in, filling out the form, and then pay $10, and then we have to separately introduce it into our system.
You have to just
typically, that's what RMA did.
You have to be very aware that what you are doing cannot be objected to as a way around a tax that you don't want to put on a ballot. That is a very, very serious consideration. That you can't, if it's a tax and you have a perpetual restriction of 2%, you in most cases have to go back to the voters. What we determined this to be was some type of a use fee.
Right.
And it needs to be, you know, legally evaluated to make sure what we come up with stays within that boundary, or we're going to get challenged and the whole thing's going to break down.
Okay.
Okay, so
wait a minute.
Can be another meeting. Okay?
Barcodes. Okay. What I was trying to do here was establish a list of immediate needs for the security department. And one is the gates. And two was replacement technology for the gate operations. ABDI is who we use now.
Right.
We're looking at a company, mm-hmm. a couple of companies, but they have a lot to bring to us. The initial cost is somewhere around $6,000, right, Brandon?
Initial.
And then
cost.
The annual cost is $2,000 per month with this company that we're locking up.
That was for ABDI. Go Access is going to, their initial cost, we got to what was about $19,000 to $20,000 to get that other company. The $6,000 cost was for ABDI to give us their LPR AI integration that would kind of speed up in what we were looking for.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
sorry.
I didn't know that. So, what is AI?
Oh, wait a minute. I got it. I just had an idea. That's what's scary about this.
Sorry, I'm asking because I already put that cost as something else, but now I need to think about, I'm already putting these in my budget, so I need to think about, is that additional?
I'm sorry.
We can talk about it offline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm done.
Are we done with the?
You were done.
Okay.
I'm putting these number in my budget already, so I'm gathering all the revenue.
The only thing I want us to remember is the priority list that Brandon gave us. And doing the gates and doing the replacement technology and doing the radios, my other wish list has to do with training, and I'm hoping that there might be some training money, period, that we can use to train Brandon and David, who can bring that training back to us.
So with any budget that I'm doing now, everybody is giving me their wish list. And then once we build the wish list together, that will be the total expenses. Then the last thing is I'm going to look at the revenue to see if revenue covers all the expenses. And at that time, we can kind of look at what other sources that
what
we
the
can.
Income is versus what we want to spend.
Yeah, so
Brandon,
and
this
I already
list
know.
Correct? If, number one is the replacement of the total gate mechanisms. Number two is the replacement technology for gate operations. Number three would be radios, and number four would be training.
I'm sorry. Let me, so this to me, and I'll explain exactly why my list is just a little bit, tiny bit different. I put software at the number one because it speeds up our current process
okay.
right now.
That's fine.
The gates I put at number two because if we don't have the money in the budget, we could maybe replace one or two gates a year.
That's what so, I was aiming for.
Yeah. And then the three would be radios and the 4-year training.
Okay. So okay, just a little flip there from
yeah,
what's on
it
the
doesn't
page.
Matter because I'm putting all into the total expenses and then see how the revenue will meet. But I know for sure it won't meet. So, and that's why I'm thinking that we need to start looking at the barcode because I need to finalize the budgets at the end of March. Because if we need to increase, the revenue has to go out, right, by Amelia. The revenue has to go out by March 16 or something. So
it's got to be on the 218
right,
notice.
Right, right. So, and that's why I'm, you know, if we're going to bring in barcode, it's a project now that we need to do.
If we're going
to
bring in barcodes, I have to have a first reading. I have to have a second reading of the ordinance. And because it's a special, because it's a new fee, I believe if I'm, let me think.
Is it a new fee? Because Mark introduced it.
No,
in the last
it is because it was never approved. It was never adopted by the board.
Do we have a first reading on an ordinance, or do we just
yes.
talk about it?
I have to have a first reading on an ordinance. One moment. I'm looking at the original ordinance that he put together to see if it was 30 days before implementation or... Here we go. He wanted to pass it on January 15th. And put the ordinance into effect on March 1st. So he didn't have it as included in the Prop 218 notice.
Mm-hmm. But then in November, he passed the budgets. It was approved. So in November of, you know,
he put
the budget together, added the $40,000 or $80,000 in there, right? So at that time, it wasn't approved.
That is exactly correct.
Oh, okay.
He put in this new amended budget, I think.
Right, he did.
And yeah, he did. And the amended budget was passed, but the board didn't pass the ordinance to implement the fee.
Okay. So then we need to do it again, right? The timing.
Yeah, we have to start it again. I can introduce it at a special meeting. I have to adopt it at a regular meeting, and I believe that there has to be like 5 business days in between when I introduce it and adopt it.
Why don't you and I talk about you know,
okay.
how and the timing? Because the March 1st draft is
of the
just
budget.
The rates. Yeah, it's just the you know utility rates.
Right.
But the barcode seems like it's a separate thing that we need to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get together and talk about that.
Okay.
Because if we need to
include it in the Prop 218 notice.
Yeah. If we need to hire somebody to kind of like get that process in place.
Uh-huh. And figure out how...
Yeah.
How we would do it, how we would implement
that,
it.
That needs to be done by May when I've introduced the final budget, right? Let's talk
yeah.
about it offline.
Okay.
There's another the last piece of that puzzle.
Okay.
Is the ongoing debate about our ability to use discretionary income,
yes.
i.e. money that comes from
yeah.
the
property tax. Yeah.
Okay, and we had the grand jury report that said, oh, we shouldn't be doing that. We are not, legally as I understand it, okay, required to comply with that recommendation.
That's the way I understand it, too.
Okay, so wait. Let me finish the thought. Because what I want is, or what I would consider, is a fresh look at the relationship of that discretionary income to the security tax money. And again, understand that if we want to make that contribution from our property tax allocation, okay, what is our legal right or ability to do that?
We can.
Because if we can.
Yeah, I don't think there's any restrictions to that money.
Because it's money the county gives to us.
Unrestricted funds.
It's unrestricted.
That's what I understand.
Discretionary income. It's not tied to anything. And I would want a hard and fast legal opinion on our ability to make up a number, $200,000 out of that money, or $100,000 out of that money, okay, to fund a capital improvement project.
For the gates.
Okay, we need to go back one tiny bit from where John is, and that was that we were using all of the security, all of the
property
income tax that we got back to support security, all of it, $650,000, it went to security. And that was the way that we managed to get along for so long. We went to the grand jury. We were taken to the grand jury. The grand jury said we shouldn't be spending all of that money on security. We should be spending that money in other places where we need it. And so what happened was there was a pronouncement that we were not going to ever spend any more money from the property taxes. The interpretation was by a couple of board members was that we were never going to spend any money, and it was all going to go to reserves. So the first year, we allocated $50,000 from property taxes to go to security. The next year, we have allocated nothing from property tax. There is no reason, certainly not from the grand jury, the civil grand jury, there is no reason why we can't decide to take some of that money, it's unrestricted funds, and put it towards security. Where we got stuck was my board member to the right of me, and I don't know where Tim was on it, but they decided, and we voted on it, that all of the money was going to go to reserves, right? And so that's why we have not been using any of that property tax money to go to security. I am totally in agreement with John.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and that's exactly my recollection, too, of how it went, and so that's your discretionary money to spend as you see fit.
Right, and so what we need to do is say we need this money to go in more than one direction.
Well, this is my
some other places that I'm sure we could use a little bit of that money.
But John, I heard you, and I will get a legal opinion from Patrick on that topic.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I want to put my CFO hat on. Our reserve, the rainy day fund, we have all these restricted funds, which is fine,
right,
but we don't have an operating reserve. Our bank account right now is dipped down to $3 million. Which is not enough for a rainy day fund. So my recommendation is we feed that bucket first enough so that we have enough rainy day fund before
that's an easy argument to win. Because, you know, pardon my sarcasm here in two ways. Number one, that in the interim, taking the 2018 increases and putting them into water and sewer reserves is peeing in the ocean.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And secondly, in a conversation, again, pardon my sarcasm, it's just what I do.
He's from New York.
Is that if I was having a conversation with RMA, I would be saying to them, you know, we're up against it here from a revenue standpoint, and we're looking for every way we can possibly cut expenses to manage ourselves inside our security tax. You know, one of the alternatives might be just take the gates out.
And then you can watch everybody lose their grip on reality.
And then we would meet with total silence, and maybe we could have an intelligent conversation about, dude, you collect all this money from all the people who use all these gates. So how do you help us? Okay, being that, you know, every time we try to help you, we get called to the grand jury. Okay, mm-hmm. So if you'd like some help here, you know, put your heads together and figure out how we get it.
And the property tax has increased from $650 to $750 to $950 yeah. this year, $950,000.
Yeah, because every time,
oh, it hasn't. I didn't hear that. I didn't know that yet.
And every time somebody sells a house, and the taxes on my house would virtually triple. I've been here 40 years.
Yeah, sure, mm-hmm. sure.
If I sell my house, maybe that would be my contribution. I could just...
Yeah. Okay. Yes, ma'am. I feel like we need to stop, yes. first of all. We brought up all of the things that I had on the list to check out barcodes and determine the amount of security impact fees and all that stuff that has to be brought together in order for us to start working on the things that Brandon and the community needs for security. We are not updated. These plans that he suggested and that we've recognized now as absolutely necessary, they will bring us up to maybe being able to operate, you know, comfortably for a few years without having everything break down.
I'd say about
a
good 10 years.
We need to do this. And my suggestions on here were simply, how can we make it happen? Should we plan it out for a long period of time? That would go along with collecting security impact fees on a yearly basis. Some years it would be more than other years. So that's my that's the end of my statement. That's my director comments.
And I don't have any, so we're done, right?
Okay, so we're adjourned. Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
10:50. Thank you.